Welcome back, everyone. Episode 113. We finally got Tyler down to the studio. He seemed like he's lost track of time, and he's holding court upstairs doing
some
stuff.
He's a busy guy today.
Yeah, I guess.
So we got
sought after.
We got the usual crew here.
We're just talking, you know, about GI portfolios.
I know. Private wealth series. Very important stuff. We got a little bit more of a, normally it's fine, but I got a little bit of time constraint. I'm running behind on some other stuff I need to get to. All right. So we got myself, Keith, we got Tyler and Lisa in the house. So it's been busy. It's been a busy time, and we're on episode 113. So we're moving right along, and markets continue to do their things. They're moving around quite a bit.
The reason Keith says it's a busy time, just so everybody knows, is because he's going to Chicago to see Ted Nugent next week, and the week after he's going to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
He was in Mexico a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think I'm
living the life, rightfully so, for a fearless leader.
Yeah, we're doing some good stuff, so, but we're busy, and then we got a little videos this afternoon too. So quarterly economic update, and you guys have an insight series to do tomorrow. So
what are we doing it on, Lisa?
A little sneak preview.
That's a whole different story of how you forced me to prepare the slides now.
Why do you give me shit about it?
We're talking
about him.
Yeah, that's the only person I'm doing it for.
So stay tuned.
I got looped into that. Alternatives.
Nice.
We're talking about that on the Insight Series tomorrow.
So we got a lot of good stuff, and we'll do the economic update here, what happened last quarter, and kind of our views going forward. So we have a lot of good stuff coming out in the next few days.
And we will also post this to YouTube, like we did the last couple of months.
So, Lisa was just on TV yesterday.
You
were on Fox Business.
I was on Fox on Monday, so that's good. So
how'd you end Fox Business?
It was a very quick one. Sometimes you get 3 to 5 minutes. It was about a minute. So
if you have a chance, you should go watch, because the ending of the Fox Business was great.
What are you talking about? The video, the thumbs, or what are you
looking at? The double thumbs up?
Yeah, I give the double thumbs up.
Really?
So, yeah. It was good. So all right, we're a little off track here, but let's start with two truths and a lie, get back to the podcast. We'll do, I know Lisa's going to be talking about this, and this is kind of one thing that she's been looking forward to, I think, talking about. She hasn't been over here in the U.S. long enough to kind of not want to talk about it, but it's midterm elections. All right, we'll start with A. Midterm election years tend to be the weakest of the four-year presidential cycle. B, the S&P has historically delivered strong returns in the 12 months after midterm elections, averaging mid-teen returns. Or C, the stock market rarely posts a negative return in October to October period following midterms, and has not been negative since 1982. Those are the two options. I'm gonna, since Tyler was late here, I'm gonna have him start.
We used to have a bunch of charts on midterm elections. So midterm election years, the market tends to rise slightly and then fall heading into and be negative heading into the midterm elections. And then post midterm elections, it rebounds, but I don't know the exact percentage.
No.
So I would say A is probably on a generality. Midterm elections tend to be the weakest. I would say yes. Because even the presidential election years, the market is actually quite positive. So I'll go with A is true. Strong returns in the 12 months after midterm elections. I would guess B is true, and then C is false. The stock market rarely posts a negative return. I'm gonna change it. I'm gonna go with B is false. It doesn't average mid-teen returns the 12 months after.
All right. Lisa?
I think A is wrong.
Whoa. Okay.
Yep. I think midterm election years tend to be the weakest in a four-year president cycle. That would include the presidential election year. And I think they are on pace. Like midterm election years generally are more volatile. Which does not really mean weakest.
Why?
Anyways, I got a
good question. Oh, you want A. You're not going to give me a rationale on the other couple?
Just, going A.
That's fine.
Just straight up.
No.
Nope. Lock it in.
No, I think that B is correct, that after the 12 month after the actual election, averaging mid-teen returns, that's a lot, but why not? And then stock market, really, I think that is true too. I'm not sure about if it's not have been negative since 1982, but I still think A is wrong because I think it's on the same pace as the presidential election year.
Sure. All right. Well, you both are wrong.
Really?
Yeah. How about that? Well, let's start with A. Tyler was right. It tends to be the weakest of the.
Okay.
So that is true.
Should have stuck with C.
You should have. B, it tends to be midterms, mm-hmm. The 12 months after, it tends to be the strongest mm-hmm. of the 4 years, especially when you go October to October. And then what surprised me here is the C. Some of the stuff I was reading, it says it's. Since 1964, it's never reported a negative return.
Mm-hmm.
64, so I threw in 82. But okay, and then I saw another stat that said 1939. It's the last time you've seen a negative return. So it doesn't. So generally speaking,
even 1982 time. Seems long. So
yeah, and Tyler was right though. The way the market tend to work in the when he kind of mm-hmm. talked about midterm is the markets are okay at the beginning of the year. They do sell off going into election, mm-hmm. then you were. The pattern was right.
Yeah.
It's just the numbers and the strengths.
Because we used to have a chart. I used to keep a chart on that yep. where you if you average out the returns, the inflection point is, I think it was like 10 or 12 days before the midterms, the market actually inflects and goes higher.
Yep.
You hit the actual election date and the market starts to run after that.
Yeah. And that's where you get that strong midterm. Yeah. Mid-teens return to the shoot. Well, there you go. We're off to a great start, you guys. We've got Tyler in the studio finally. We got them both tricked on the question. And then we'll change gears as well because I'm sure the next few weeks, months, we'll end up talking about midterm elections. Because
Hold on.
Oh, boy.
The stock market rarely posts a negative return.
Yeah, rarely. Like
that's
what I was
true.
Reading.
That's true, though.
That's part's true, but since the year 1982. Yeah,
oh.
So it's just like, you know.
Good Lisa, morning, Tyler.
Yeah, there's two parts to that thing. It's, you know, if you're taking a CFA test.
So am I supposed to be, know since 1964 versus 1932?
That's what you should have
that
known.
Was, yeah. That was the point. I threw 1982 seems like a long time,
okay.
But 64 and 39 even seem longer. So I at least made it a little more reasonable.
Okay.
So anyway. Welcome to the show, Tyler. We'll talk midterm elections right. and stuff later on more, but we'll talk about something that's been a little more in the news lately. It's momentum stocks and kind of leveraged ETFs that Lisa kind of alluded to last week, if you listened to. So momentum stocks, we've been talking about these a little bit, especially in the semiconductor industry. Tyler and I have an opinion on them, which surprised me as of going through yesterday, Tuesday in the market. Momentum stocks have actually turned down here the last few days and mm-hmm. pretty aggressive. So they're down 35% a basket of momentum stocks, right? That's not just including semiconductors. Yeah, no. There's other things.
I mean, momentum
there.
Has like a lot of energy in it right now
yep.
just because that has been the momentum trade.
Yeah.
Along with semis.
100%. So that's down 35% in 11 days. That's a real drop. It's been on a huge spike. So in momentum stocks, generally speaking, winners keep winning, losers keep losing. What do you guys, I guess, starting with you, Tyler, what do you think about momentum investing in general and kind of when to use it, not use it, when to be careful?
I mean, it's a hard game to play.
It is.
Because again, you get these periods where, I mean, you get into, if you're late into momentum and you have these types of turns, it can be pretty painful. So
do we have an example of how painful exactly?
I mean, if you think back to...
an example of portfolios
yes,
that
I
we
do,
may or
actually.
May not have.
So a good example of this is we have our gradient tactical rotation portfolio, which follows momentum specifically.
Yep.
And we launched an ETF on it back in 2022. And then early in 2023, so coming into the year, we were invested in S&P low vol index, which is lower volatility stocks. And then we switched to U.S. momentum stocks in February, but we caught the peak of the momentum and there was a significant drawdown in momentum names in February and March when we had the banking crisis in 2023. So it can go, I don't mind it. I think it, generally speaking, it works over time, but you can get these periods of pretty significant drawdowns that I think scare away a lot of investors because you don't know exactly when this is going to come. And when you get a 35% drawdown in 11 days, you might look at that because most people don't day trade, right? So in 11 days, if you haven't looked at your account for 7 days, all of a sudden, let's say you're down 28%, chances are that you're going to say, well, now I'm down 28%, so I might as well hold on to it, right? Yeah. So like you get into those cycles of not wanting to sell out of these things.
Or you panic.
Or you panic and you sell at the bottom and all of a sudden momentum rebounds. Yeah. So it's a tricky game to play. So I like it, but not as a significant part of your overall portfolio. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of momentum going this year, specifically with AI or different areas of AI. And I think like with momentum, it's not necessarily that there's a big crash needed to tame these movements. Like for example, COVID in 2020 or but when we think of the whole AI momentum that's going on currently with the semis, and then we saw it with Samsung reporting earnings, and they had a blowout earnings report. Everything was fine, beat expectations, and the stock was still down and dragged basically the whole sub-industry down with it. And there we see, okay, the stock was priced to perfection. It was kind of implied that they beat earnings. And it was still not good enough. Yeah. So at some point with these momentum is like, okay, how much of that positives and optimism is already built in and priced in? And how much more does a company needs to deliver to being able to keep that momentum going? And that can change pretty fast without actually really something happening. Because again, company's fine. They reported blowout earnings and it still wasn't enough. And that alone can drag the whole or stop or reverse or at least put a dent in a whole momentum trade. Yeah. So I think that is important to see, hey, there's not a big crash necessary to necessarily reverse that.
I mean, DRAM, ETF, DRAM was down like 9% yesterday.
Yeah, and the momentum, the basket itself was down 7, which is probably a significant part of it, right?
Yeah.
But here's a chart of, you can't see it, if listeners, but it's basically a basket of momentum stocks over the last year have gone from 200 to hit 500 not too long ago. And we have 11 day, so that's what, 150% up in a matter of a year. That's pretty good. The S&P is not up 150%, but then you've had now a 35% drawdown in 11 days, which makes you a little nervous, but still, I'd say it. 200 versus 340 are still up 60% in a year, which is good. And the reason I'm talking about the chart and the kind of performance is one thing that did surprise me, as I'm, known as a growth investor. So I do invest in these momentum names, but supposedly, some of the stuff I was reading at is that momentum is the best risk adjusted returns versus other factors over long periods of time, which is kind of does make sense, that growth tailwind, but it also has the scariest amount of crashes. And that's what Tyler alluded to, that if you get on the wrong side of momentum names, and the trick is an investor is like, okay, that 200 to 500 is fun. Now, if you're late to the game, right, and buying it at 480, 500, now you're down 35%. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, your 500 goes to 350, even though you bought at 200.
Yeah. It's
so scary. Yeah.
It's scary. So do you guys have any thoughts on what could cause momentum to change? I mean, you've kind of alluded to a little bit, Tyler and Lisa,
it's just a change in the environment.
Yeah.
I mean, take the semis, for example. So we've seen a pretty significant pullback in a lot of semi names because in momentum, as you said, winners continue to be winners. The problem is you get the FOMO trade, the fear of missing out. And so you get a lot of buyers buying into these stocks, even though they're already overvalued. And so if you talk about Samsung that crushed the quarter yesterday, but still trading down 8-9% because there was just too much, I think it was more just the FOMO trade because all of a sudden you had So like Samsung specifically, I think is a little bit of a different issue, but like Samsung, for example, is trades in the South Korean market. You can't actually get access to it. The only real way to get access to it is through ETFs. And there was a recent launch of an ETF called DRAM that holds Samsung, SK Hynix, and I think it's just Micron. And those are the only three.
Those are really that,
I think it's the only three in there, or those make up like 70% of the ETF, something like that. So all of a sudden you have this influx of money that's going into these because you traditionally as a US investor, you couldn't get much exposure to them. So all of a sudden, if you can now get exposure to these types of names, money runs up. Obviously, think about traditional supply demand. If there's more buyers than sellers, the price just generally goes higher. And so despite the money going in, people aren't necessarily looking at the true valuation, the fundamentals of the company, because they just don't want to miss out on the trade.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you have Samsung report their earnings and it was a blockbuster earnings, but generally speaking, it wasn't good enough of a beat to keep the price where it was at or even to move it higher. And so all of a sudden you have people that just say, okay, well, now I need to get out of this name because prices run up and it's not worth it. So you just see these rotations where it turns into a good idea and runs the price up, turns into the FOMO trade. And then all of a sudden you get the actual fundamentals of the company on a quarterly basis and realize it's not as good as what the price is telling you it is. And then you get the sell-offs.
Yeah. Lisa, got anything to...
No, there. I think that kind of summarizes it very well, how fast it actually can go. I think that might be, you know, some surprising to some investors.
Like gold last year.
Yeah.
I think one of the, off your point, Tyler, though, is one of the things that makes me nervous after doing this a long time is when you have these companies that have done very well, blow out their quarters, and then the stock reacts negatively.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, generally a good sign. Well,
my favorite name, Broadcom. Yeah. I mean, they're up to 475 and report their quarter. They beat on everything. They introduced the
jalapeno,
open AI, and the stock's down 20%.
Yeah. It's in Micron too, right? That day it reported a few weeks ago was up, ended up 15, almost 20%. And then now it's probably almost down 20% from the reported. And that's just in a week and a half, maybe a 40% swing it's a fun game to play when you're right.
When you're right.
Let's kind of segue into Lisa's that she touched on last week
kind of fits the theme here. It's a seamless transition to the next
topic. Whoever produced this show is right on top of this game, especially when you do it in 5 minutes. All right, we'll talk about the leveraged ETFs and the rise of, you know, Lisa did a little bit of work on this, so I'm sure she'll be able to add a lot to this segment of the amount of leveraged ETFs out there is just mind-boggling. And then the stat that Lisa had last week is AUM in these products has doubled to $220 billion between March 30th and June 3rd.
It's crazy.
Yeah, this is
Lisa, what are your thoughts on what's going on here and kind of all the things that we've been talking about?
I mean, yeah, like leveraged ETFs, I mean, that's especially more and more interesting among retail investors specifically. And you just said like AUM in those products doubled. There's a lot of
that's single, real money going into those things.
It's a lot of single stocks ETFs being launched with 2x, 3x leverage. There's also some proposed 5x leveraged ETFs. They are not out there yet, not approved, but issuers try it nevertheless. I mean, what that means or why this is so crazy, it means, hey, when the underlying stock is down 20%, the ETF clears out. It goes to zero because it times five, 20 times five is minus 100. So it's like with one day, and that can happen, right?
It happens.
And we saw that last couple of days, and then it's basically to zero. So it's an interesting area, but these products can get really crazy really fast. And my worry a little bit is that I don't know if really necessarily every investor know what these are and how these behave, especially with a long term, or when you think you should can hold them long term and necessarily the risks behind them. And some investors are also retail investors are getting really crazy about the leverage that they pack into it. I mean, they take out loans, basically margins to being able to buy these. That's the first leverage. And then you have from the ETF itself that is on a single stock, another two or three layers. So that's layers and layers of the leverage. So some brokers actually put a little bit of a damp to these craziness. For
as
example,
well
Schwab,
as they should, I think. Right?
Yeah, it's increasing margin requirements. But yeah, it's a wild world out there. But we saw some risk, especially in South Korea with Samsung and SK Hynix over the last couple of weeks of what this can do to investors and the stock price that are not exposed to these levered ETFs. So it can have like real life implications to all of the other investors and to the stock price itself without being exposed to these. And fun fact, like SK Hynix and Tyler, you mentioned it, like the only way to have access to that is through ETFs because they're traded on the South Korean stock exchange. But SK Hynix is going to the NASDAQ as a US listing this Friday. And US issuers are already lining up with single, triple leveraged ETFs on
really?
This one name.
Already.
Yeah, already. So
ProShares is already filed.
Yeah, already filed.
I think it's a 2X SK Hynix.
Yeah.
Oh, 2X.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. It's like it's not even there yet. And we saw what it could do. And we can probably talk a little bit more into in that what it did in South Korea based on two names. But yeah, it's tell what you think. It's the wild world.
I mean, the problem with these is, so like, I remember back in COVID when the market had fallen, I think it was like 15%. I remember buying into the S&P, I think it was 3X levered ETF.
Long, I hope. Long, hopefully we weren't going short after that.
No. But all of a sudden we had another 15% of downside, right? But there was so much volatility that on the days that the market was down, I was down 3X because I was in the 3X levered. But on the days that the market was up, I was up like 2X.
Yeah.
So it was like, when you get these periods of high volatility, these things also, the ETFs also break. So it's-
yeah, they don't react.
They don't act like you intuitively think, right? Three up, three down should be the 3X
that's
leverage,
the idea.
Right?
When you see 3X levered, it should be three up or three down. But for some reason, there was so much volatility. I think the options pricing was probably off the way that they were structured. You were getting like 3X the downside, 2X the upside. So you do have to have some caution when you are investing in these. The other thing is these reset on a daily basis. So it's not like you have 3X from the initial starting point.
Yeah,
it's like you have 3X from today, from tomorrow, from the day after that. So it's like it's a continuous reset that I don't think a lot of people understand. So if the market is down 20%, you're down 60, you need like 200% to get back to even.
Yeah.
Which means you still need the market to be up. Like,
100%
like if you get caught on the downside, you can crush your returns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a hard thing to claw back.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're interesting. I think what they allow people to do is express a view in a quicker time. And I think I'm fine with them. It's just, you have to make sure that you allocate appropriately.
Yeah.
We don't buy into, so you know, our portfolios, we're not buying this stuff. This is more for individual retail investor. We just want to educate you on that. And
hey, maybe I'll buy the, pick a portfolio and we'll buy the 2X SK Hynix. We'll call it a day.
And just roll the client's money. I don't think that would be the greatest solution.
No.
So no, we tend to, when we manage portfolios. So this is, I think, aimed at a lot of retail investors, a little bit, you know, with gambling, because it's, you know, we have all kinds of different investor types, right? It's becoming more retail, more kind of Kelsey-like of all these different betting. This is a way of making a bet without not necessarily investing in stocks. You're like, ooh, I think semis are hot. I'm going to, instead of just buying the semiconductor index, which is a basket, I'm going to do 3X that, right?
Yeah.
So, and I've used these myself personally, you know, just a small allocation in my own account to express a view, and I've had success in them and not
some failures.
And some failures. So, Just to be completely honest, as a professional investor, it's a hard game to play. And then the longer you hold them, the worse.
The longer you hold them, the worse
they track. So if you do buy them,
it does not have anything to do with the underlying stock anymore. The longer you hold them,
it's because they don't true up. I mean, they true up on a day. Say a 3x. Let's say just for example, that's supposed to track 3 up, 3 down.
That's a volatility drag or volatility.
Maybe 280, which is close to 3. One day is fine, but then you do a 280 times 280 times 280 over multiple periods, and all of a sudden your index is up 1.5 times, and you thought you'd be up 3 over a month, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't quite.
I mean, match. If you think of the traditional cycle of a stock, that mean reverts, right? You go up, you come down, you go up. When you come down, because your base on a 3x or even 2x is a lot higher, your drops are a lot more. And so you drop a lot faster, but then you climb back up. Because you're at a lower base now, as much. So when you hit the downside, you have quite a bit more downside, and you get the upside, you have less upside, and so that's where you start to get the like splitting of the two.
Yeah. No, it's just crazy what they're, especially when I get it doing against a basket or a sector and industry, the expressive view, but single stock, that seems pretty aggressive.
Which is also interesting because it can, like we say, like a risk for having these kind of betting things out there because it's nothing more than a bet basically. And having too many of these or too many people buying these, I mean, it can have significant implications for the underlying stock itself that has nothing to do with fundamentals or nothing to do with normal market movements, but because of these highly levered products, multiple of them based on one single stock. And we saw that actually in South Korea, where the two largest companies, Samsung and SK Hynix, are making up the most of the index there. And a lot of these leveraged products on that. And they made up nearly more than half of the daily volume in these stocks.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Just at levered, there was not normal people buying and selling the stock or institutional investors. That was just based on the levered ETFs. That was more than half the daily volume. And then we saw what happened. I mean, we had quite some dramatic price movements, and actually the regulators there said, so the South Korean SEC basically said they were actually regretting approving this highly levered ETFs. Mm. And they were actually saying, hey, if a retail investor wants to buy these, and then we had that in our Two Truths and a Lie last week, that they are having a questionnaire for retail investors, that they have to go through the questionnaire. And as I said last week, Wall Street published a questionnaire. And it's not easy when you're retail investors or maybe not working in finance, and you have to pass this little test in order to being able to buy these products, to have a simple understanding of what you can expect in those. Because again, it can catch many investors off guard, and it can have real life implications for the whole market, not only for one John investor.
Yeah, I assume, you know, if you really wanted to do it, if you're in South Korea, you got clot open on one side, you're taking the test on the other, you're feeding your questions over to your AI thing.
What we talked about last week is the question is how many times can you take it in a day?
Right.
I assume if you want to get into, but at least there's some kind of guardrail to some extent, right?
I suppose when you answer the question, you kind of understand it.
Yeah, hopefully,
you get it wrong, then you understand why. So, I don't know.
No, it's,
I think that always helps, like education. If what can you expect? How to use it in your portfolio?
Yeah.
I think that for that alone, it's actually useful, because like we discussed before, it can be so different from the underlying asset. And the longer you are invested in these, the ETF does not correlate with the underlying asset at some point at all over long periods of time. So
I do worry that if they become more and more popular, that more and more people do them, then
are really like 5X are coming. Like
they could have more kind of short-term negative impact on fundamentals, or at least the stock price, not the fundamentals of the company, right? So then we invest on company fundamentals, right? And you hope you buy them right and they go higher. But also if you're getting these leveraged ETFs,
there's a wild short card that can
whipping
go,
stocks around, which is not sure your true price discovery kind of gets muted or even distorted. So
it's also like a little bit like the saying going, the tail of the dog, or the tail wiggles the dog. The tail wiggles the dog. What is that? That is a saying. Like that's a minor thing wiggles the whole thing, right? Oh. Like these levered the ETFs.
Tail wags the dog. Wiggles the dog.
Whatever. Wiggles, tickles. We got something with a dog and a tail.
We got something with a dog and a tail. But you know what I mean, right? If like the underlying stock falls and then we have these levered products that amplifies that even more, it was like, okay, who, like to your point, like, what is driving the performance now? It's not fundamentals. It's not normal price. Like how do you even kind of account this into a whole analysis?
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth, you know, paying attention to and knowing what they are and how to use them, where to use them. And I think for our clientele, it's, we don't invest in them, but it's something to be aware of. And if you're watching this, you know, this video, we should probably have a big red box on beware disclosures. Of leveraged ETFs.
Do you think the US should also do it like South Korea, or at least, hey, this is the education on it. This is what you can expect. At least, you know,
I think the margins where you could control that, at least not being able to maybe put margin dollar in these 3X leverage, right? I think that would help. At least if you know you're losing money, it's money that
you know, with Kalshi and Polymarket, with all the betting stuff, what you get in, you can lose.
Yeah,
but here it's like
you can lose and then somehow,
you know, it's like a different animal.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about betting versus options.
Oh, Tyler, a little sneak peek
for next week.
All right, we'll wrap this up real quickly with a quick little recap of 4th of July. Did you guys have a good 4th of July last weekend? Yeah. Weather was perfect,
I think. Gorgeous, yeah.
I mean, because everybody's expecting super hot, and then it was going to be super rainy, and then it just ended up being nice 85-degree weather, which I think, you know, 80, 85, I think most people in Minnesota enjoy that with less humidity, so it was good. Did you guys have some fun activities? You didn't blow up any hands or anything with fireworks? And
still have both hands.
Nice.
All my toes were nice. Good.
Lisa, did you go watch it anywhere? Or did you get rained? Some got rained out, by the way, here in Minnesota.
We got rained out. I mean, Saturday night. Yeah. Like 6:30, I think. 7, okay. Something like that.
No fireworks. And like our city canceled the fireworks.
Yeah.
So, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a lot of, I watched it from the balcony because I have a great view over the skyline and stuff. And not, it's not a penthouse, but I just have a good view over the city. And it's like, everything was blowing up, like here, over there, over there, over there. So I got like nice view. But again, like the weather was not the best. So that unfortunately put a little damper on it. But the day before, we went to friends in Wisconsin and had like a little barbecue and
true American.
Kind of, you know, on a lake and very, very traditional.
I would assume Mr. D, Dominic.
Mr. Dominic.
Was full gear of USA or not?
Yeah. He had his pants, his Mount Rushmore US socks. That he got from there, his US colored pants, and then the upper part, like 250. I was like, okay, you're geared up.
Yeah. I expect nothing less from him. Yeah. That's good.
Johnny America,
straight from Austria. lastly, World Cup.
What Tyler, did you do on 4th of July, actually?
Same thing, like family. It was just nice. It was just
all the good. Kids home.
All the kids home. It was relaxing. Did some skiing and tubing and just fun lake activities.
Water skiing? What I just heard? That water skiing was invented in Minnesota.
Really?
I just heard that yesterday, yeah.
I guess I didn't know
that's
that
pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
We heard, you know, like, then we have a pontoons on parade or boats on, you know, kind of parade on the kind of unofficial. We had like, our lake is not that big, so we had 16, 18 boats, which is quite a few. So it's nice that people kind of do a lap around the lake. Takes you about 15, 20 minutes to do, or half.
Are you all going like
really slow? Okay. Yeah. And then there's, you know, the people that don't have boats or
you guys cabins. Vote on the.
We used to, and then now it's, I think everybody's kind of.
So my parents' cabin, they do the parade same, and then. Yeah. You get
there's some
they,
really good.
They go and tally up the votes, and then they go announce the winner.
We should do that. And usually, the time we get around a half hour, everybody's had a few cocktails. everybody's ready to go.
So
do
you
their
just
own
make
thing.
Sure you don't bump into each
That's
other.
Exactly. So it's a good time. Lastly, World Cup.
Yeah, oh, so disappointing.
Tyler,
US sucks.
Yeah. Lisa.
Austria is out too. US is out. I don't know who to vote for anymore. So I'm disinterested up from now.
Norway, Spain,
yeah,
Argentina, Switzerland.
I heard there's a big controversy in Argentina. match yesterday.
Argentina won. I saw
they came back.
Egypt was up like 2-0,
and they came back in like last 15 minutes.
Gotta love Messi.
Yeah, that's why the FIFA. There's
the referee. There's a little
controversy going on. Thought the U.S. controversy was bad.
Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo's out.
Yeah,
Brazil, Neymar's out. So that's the only superstar really left.
The Norwegian one.
Yeah, the newbie superstar.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was here in the U.S. and in Mexico, and I thought it was. It's not over yet,
Keith.
It is for the U.S.
There's still 8 teams left.
Is it really? I don't know. I try.
The U.S. is out. It's over.
I tried. But now I know why I really didn't spend a whole lot of time watching soccer between the rules, the offsides, and the flopping by these guys.
And the drama that's going on.
Yeah. Oh, and the end of the day, we had 3 shots on goal. I'm like, 3? So, anyway, we'll leave it at that. So, all right. Hope everyone liked, like, and subscribe.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Ellegaard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.